Now, rather than speculate, I want to give you a passage from the book of Daniel, which very clearly reveals that this is so. I'm not going to read the whole chapter, but if you're interested, you would do well to read the chapter for yourself later. Daniel chapter 10. This chapter relates how Daniel set aside a period of 3 weeks for special prayer. And he did what we've come to call a Daniel fast. He didn't give up all food, but he only ate the plainest and simplest food, and he drank no wine and he ate no meat. And he was mourning before God on behalf of his people Israel, who were captives of a Gentile empire. And at the end of 3 weeks, a very glorious angel came to him with the answer to his prayer, which was a revelation from God of what would be the future of his people, which consists of Daniel chapters 11 and 12. But the angel said to him, "The first day you began to pray, your prayer was heard, and I was sent with the answer to your prayer. But," he said, "it took me 3 weeks to get through, because somewhere between the throne of God and Daniel on earth, I was opposed by satanic angels, and I had to force my way through those angels." So it's very clear that at the time of Daniel, somewhere between God's throne and earth, there was this satanic kingdom. I believe it's still there. It was still there when Paul wrote Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, which was at least 30 years after the death and resurrection and ascension of Jesus. In other words, whatever the situation was, it wasn't changed by the death and resurrection and ascension of Jesus. Jesus ascended far above Satan's kingdom, but Satan's kingdom still remained in place. And then the angel told Daniel, "I've come with the answer to your prayer, and when I leave, I'm going to have to fight my way back through the same angels, and then I'm going to have to fight other satanic angels." And the angel that came to Daniel said, "On my way here, the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. So for 21 days, these angels were battling in the heavenlies. And he also speaks about kings of Persia. In the language of the King James, and which is used here, I understand the prince was the supreme ruler, the kings were sub-rulers. But they were all concerned with the kingdom or the empire of Persia, which at that time was the largest and most powerful empire on earth. It had 127 provinces. So Satan had one super angel who was responsible to him for the whole kingdom of Persia. But this super angel had other angels that were responsible for different areas within the kingdom of Persia. Now, this is no theory for me, because I've seen in many instances and cases how this principle works. For instance, let's suppose that there were major cities in the Empire of Persia, which there were. Well, I think there was one sub-angel over each major city. As I travel from city to city and place to place, I've learned that to be effective in ministry in a certain city, very often I have to identify the particular satanic power that's at work in that city. And it's different from city to city to city. Again, there were a lot of different nationalities in the Persian Empire. And my observation is that many times there's a particular satanic king over a particular racial group. Taking the United States, which is made up of many different racial groups, and where I've lived now for more than 20 years, my clear impression is that different racial groups have different satanic powers over them, And in dealing with those racial groups spiritually, it becomes important to identify the power that's over them. For instance, as all everybody knows, there are a lot of black Negroes in America. Now, I have no prejudice against black people. I love them. I have a black daughter. But they are the descendants of people who were taken there as slaves. And I've shared this with black Americans. You'll find that most black Christians can only get so far and something seems to stop them. And I have shared my opinion that you came as slaves, you've been politically emancipated, but you've never been spiritually emancipated. You're still under a spirit of slavery. Now, Paul speaks about a spirit of slavery in Romans chapter 8 when he says, we have not received a spirit of slavery again, but the spirit of the God which makes us sons and daughters of God. And when he's talking about slavery, if you look at the context, he's talking about religious legalism. People whose religion consists of sets of rules, do this, don't do that. My observation, again, is that nearly all black American churches are extremely legalistic. Hardly any of them know the real liberty of God's grace. What is the reason? The reason is that that spirit of slavery has never really been dealt with. It still has a measure of control over them. They're Christians, many of them, and some of them are very lovely Christians. But as a group, they've never been set free. Take another group in the United States, the American Indians. Basically, the United States is a country of liberty. Unfortunately, liberty has been carried much too far these days. It's a country where almost anybody can prosper because of the nature of the economy and the laws and so on. You don't have to have a doctorate in philosophy to prosper. In fact, you probably do better without it. But there's one group that basically have never prospered, the American Indians. They've never prospered financially, they've never prospered socially, and in spiritually, they are still in awful darkness. They are basically all practices of witchcraft. And very powerful witchcraft. It's a tragedy, but my impression is that until someone with vision understands the root problem of the American Indians and is prepared to do the spiritual warfare to release them, they'll remain in bondage. Now, I've been wise enough to take my examples from a distant land. But I think if you ponder what I'm saying, in a little while you'll begin to see that there are similar principles operating in Asia. Very strong principles. Now when the angel had finished telling Daniel about this, he said, when I go, I'll have to fight again with the prince of the kingdom of Persia, and then after that I'll have to fight with the prince of the kingdom of Greece. Now why Persia and Greece? Well, because there were four Gentile empires that dominated God's people, Israel, and their land and the city of Jerusalem. And you see, the battle is always most intense spiritually where God's kingdom's issues are focused. So wherever God is at work, you'll find that Satan will be at work also. His very name means the resister. See? He resists God's purposes and God's people. He can't help it. He's a slave of his own nature. So there were four successive Gentile empires that dominated Israel: Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. Now, in Daniel's day, Persia was still the dominant empire, but the next one to follow it would be Greece. And so we see that the spiritual warfare, in a way, relates to God's people, God's purposes, and in a sense, it's necessary to carry out this spiritual warfare in order for God's purposes for his people to be fulfilled. And Daniel is a marvelous pattern of somebody who, by prayer and fasting and intercession, changed the history of his people. Let me now read the passages that I've been quoting very quickly. Daniel chapter 10, verses 2 and 3. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. I ate no pleasant food, no meat or wine came into my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. The period of 3 weeks is emphasized. Now the angel that came to him said various things. And then in verse 12, this is what he said. Do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. And behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left alone there with the kings of Persia. So somewhere on the way from God to Daniel, he was opposed by the prince of the kingdom of Persia for 21 days. And in the end, another angel of God, the angel or archangel Michael, had to come and join in the conflict. Now, if you read further on in Daniel, Michael is called the great prince or angel that stands up for the children of your people. That's Israel. So as a matter of biblical interpretation, you find this helpful. Wherever Michael is on the scene, Israel is center stage in human history, see? Because he's the particular angel that has the job of looking after Israel. And believe me, that is a pretty tough job. Now, going on, he says in verse 20 of Daniel 10, do you know why I have come to you? And now I must return to fight with the prince of Persia. In other words, the battle isn't over yet. And when I've gone forth, indeed the prince of Greece will come. That's the next major Gentile empire. And you can understand, behind the history of these human empires, there are satanic forces at work that really are the explanation of what happens. You really cannot fully understand human history if you only look on the horizontal human level, because the real forces that determine the destinies of nations and people are in the heavenlies. And then he says, verse 21 of Daniel chapter 10, and I will tell you what is noted in the scripture of truth. No one upholds me against these except Michael, your prince, again, the archangel Michael. Then you go on to the first verse of the next chapter, which is part of the same message. Also in the first year of Darius the Mede, I stood up to confirm and strengthen him. There's a clear example of the intervention of angels in human history. Why did God's angel stand up for Darius? The answer is because God's people Israel had been captured and enslaved by the Empire of Babylon. And Darius was the ruler of the Persian Empire that destroyed the Empire of Babylon and released God's people to return to their land, which was God's purpose. So behind all the human forces and the horizontal plane, there is a vertical plane and there are angelic forces, both angels of God and angels of Satan, that are at work. And human history is to be explained by the interplay of all these forces. Now, why we are significant as Christians is because God has given to us and us alone the weapons by which we can intervene in this spiritual war. governments have armies and weapons that will deal with other nations, but only the Christian church has the weapons that will intervene in the spiritual realm in the heavenlies. And you understand, the one who wins in the heavenlies ultimately determines the course of history. So the most significant thing you can do in history, in a sense, is be an intercessor and pray through the spiritual issues in the heavenlies that will determine the history of nations on earth. See, Daniel is just a perfect example